Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Good Sunday morning. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase studio. Kind of, we talked a little bit about how Tuesday is the presidential primary vote in Wisconsin, and kind of an interesting factor going on up there as initially Donald Trump about a month, 6 weeks ago, was way up in the polls there, but now the latest polling shows Texas Senator Ted Cruz in first, Trump in second, and Kasich lagging in third. And kind of this development where Cruz is the super PAC that supports Ted Cruz, they're going after Ohio Governor John Kasich. They're not going after Donald Trump. I want to play a portion. This is the Cruz super PAC ad.
The John Kasich playbook. Holding for a last-second shot and blocking out the grassroots. But that's classic John Kasich. Millionaires working side-by-side with George Soros are bankrolling his super PAC, while Kasich votes against the Second Amendment and expanded Obamacare in Ohio, costing taxpayers billions. So given John Kasich's liberal record, it's no surprise his campaign isn't rebounding, because John Kasich won't play in Wisconsin. Trusted Leadership PAC is responsible for the content of this advertising.
So that's the Ted Cruz super PAC, and of course, the Kasich super PAC then decides to go after Cruz with an ad using Donald Trump's nickname for Cruz, and in this ad, it shows Cruz with his nose growing for the lies he tells, and the nose growing and growing until it wraps around his neck several times. But here's the audio from that ad.
Many just call him Lion Ted. Lied about Ben Carson to steal a win in Iowa. Lies about being the best for the GOP when polls show he can't even beat Hillary Clinton. His TV ad about John Kasich? Lie. Stations had to pull it off the air. If Ted Cruz's mouth is moving, he's lying.
New Day Independent Media Committee, Inc. is responsible for the content of this advertising.
Yeah, there's that civility factor that I was talking about earlier. Well, joining me now in the Allstate Showcase studio is my good friend and Tribune colleague, Juan Perez Jr., education reporter. And Juan was out there all day Friday as the Chicago Teachers Union had their big day of action. And, of course, this was kind of supplemented by various other protest groups, the Fight for $15 an Hour Wage, Service Employees International Union. Yeah. I mean, it was a full day of protests. But I guess the bottom line is, and this is reflective of your story, is what will it lead to?
Yeah, that's that's the 100 million or 250 million.
I was just going. Yeah, what is
480 million?
$480 million question.
$1 billion question. I'm sitting here and I'm trying to think about what's going to happen Monday, and then what's going to happen Tuesday, what's going to happen in the weeks following. And I think that's a question that's confronting the union right now is, you know, like we talked about this morning in that story with Kim Geiger, how do they leverage this action and actually turn it into something? And by something, legislation, and by legislation that's going to get passed very quickly.
Well, tangible and tangible with cash.
Right. Immediate cash. If the dire projections are to be believed, and the numbers are very grim, whatever legislative maneuver is going to happen is going to have to take effect with some degree of frequency, right? I mean, if it's as bad as it looks, we don't necessarily have a lot of time for another protracted legislative battle, right? So,
but as much as we've talked about this, and we kind of keep waiting for the last shoe to drop.
Yep.
Because it's like a moving target, though. Yeah. But we keep waiting for that last shoe to drop. But that having been said, we have talked about the fact, if you're relying on Springfield for help these days, you're not in a very good position to leverage much of anything.
So that's, I think, how are you going to get legislators on your side and a sufficient number of them to override any kind of potential veto action, right? And what kind of legislation are you going to come up with? Because, you know, both sides, and by both sides, I mean the teachers union and Chicago Public Schools are on the same page that some kind of legislative intervention is necessary. I think they would, you know, they would agree on that. The question is, how are they both going to get behind something that's going to be palatable enough to everybody to actually advance? And if you hear about some of the ideas that the union wants to get passed, I don't know that it's something that is going to gain a lot of traction with with a lot of people.
Right.
With a lot of people. So, you know, is there compromise somehow in there in this day of not many compromises that they can get, you know, that they can find some kind of measure that can not only gain support from both aisles, but enough to actually, like, you know, move the needle and pass both houses.
And of course, you know, we know Governor Rauner has long had a dislike for the Chicago Teachers Union.
Big target on Friday.
But here he has said, and as I was speaking with Teresa Ma, he supports more money for schools. Senate President John Cullerton supports more money for schools, but wants a change in the school aid formula. Rauner is saying that's a complicated thing. He believes the school aid formula is unfair, but to make the changes in it would take too much time to address in a current round of funding. But he still maintains that funding is conditional upon parts of his turnaround agenda that include union weakening rules about negotiations. So I don't know that the needle has moved anywhere in this.
And I guess this is something I wanted to ask you. I was thinking about this on the way over this morning. How much time really would everybody have to actually get together? I mean, how long would it take to actually pass a serious piece of legislation in that short of a time frame when this session comes back in? I mean,
Well, if you had an agreement.
If you had everybody on board, you could do it pretty quick, right?
Yes.
Now, if you're dropping some kind of bomb that's going to take both sides to reach some kind of compromise on, I mean, have you ever seen anything happen like that in a very short time frame before where something like...
Not of this complication,
right? I mean, the school funding formula, that thing is...
Well, truly, I mean, and you are probably more familiar with the intricacies of the school aid formula than you wish you were.
I don't know.
But ask any rank-and-file legislator
exactly.
in Springfield how the school aid fund formula works, and they can't explain it either.
It's difficult.
And whenever you deal with that issue of school funding, you're always tasked. I hate that word tasked, but that's really what it is. You're tasked with trying to find a way so that you don't just reshake it up so there are different winners and losers. Mm. Because, and this comes to the heart of it, I think where there is agreement is, yeah, there probably ought to be more money in the formula, and that there are no losers, that the districts that might lose money are held harmless. They wouldn't lose. But that having been said, you're talking about a great deal of money here, and you're talking about where you're going to get it, what resources can you bring to bear. And that's just the education component when you're looking at a state without a budget that is falling further and further behind to the tune of billions of dollars in paying bills for everything else.
So doesn't sound like prospects are realistic. I mean, but that's the right. I mean, that's a very difficult mountain to cross, surmount, climb, to, you know, fall back off of if you're not careful. So really, you know, what happens Monday and what happens through the rest of the week as far as moving the needle? I don't know that the needle moves much, but, you know, I think the union would cast this action as a step in its work to build this populist revival.
I mean, certainly, you know, if you just look at the aesthetics of the protest. I mean, the visuals were very strong.
Yes.
We have, you know, in our polling that we've done, those polls have repeatedly showed in Chicago that voters side overwhelmingly with the teachers union as opposed to Mayor Emanuel. You also have the fact that, you know, Bruce Rauner was trying to use Emanuel and the schools to help leverage, you know, the mega deal. And now that, I mean, that never works.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know where.
and you also have a vastly weakened, politically weakened mayor at the same time.
So that somebody smells blood of some sort in the water somewhere. And I mean, there's an opportunity here. I think the union would see this as an opportunity to advance its own interests. And but when we
against,
when we talk
against
about,
those of CPS against their, and, yeah, and Emmanuel, right,
or the governor, or, right, or whoever it is that they're targeting, I think they feel like, you know, that there's something. Let me put it this way: one organizer talked to me a couple days ago on Friday, and was, in his perspective, saying that, in his view, this more progressive, left-leaning movement that's is emerging right now, or to whatever extent that is something that has eroded control of what he calls downtown Democrats, quote unquote. Those are his words, downtown Democrats. And so I think there are people in the union, though, when we talk about compromise, who look at something like this and sense an advantage, but might think that, well, there's no reason to necessarily let off the gas pedal right now. You know, some of these guys are on the ropes, we think, right? So let's continue going after them because, you know, there's something to be won here.
There's a bigger victory to be had.
I think that's a good way of putting it.
We're speaking with Juan Perez Jr., my colleague at the Tribune on the education beat, which kind of blends over to the political the political team coverage. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, joined here in the Allstate Showcase studio by my colleague from the Tribune, Juan Perez Jr., our education reporter. We're talking about the activities on Friday and what may lie ahead as far as Chicago Public Schools, Chicago Teachers Union, education funding, and how that all wraps up into the overall lack of a state budget as we go for 10 months. And I was speaking to him off the air, and I said, you know, these are, I have been doing this a long time. And yeah,
I'm, yes.
Hey, kids, get off my lawn. But no, I've never seen really times like this before, and where everything is so wrapped up into each other and none of it moves. There's no movement on as far as anything, trying to find resolution. And what scares me is back in the day when I first started covering Illinois government politics, I don't know, many years ago, but I was working for United Press International. I wasn't working for the Tribune. So basically, I could say that the legislature was stalled on Chicago-related issues, period and paragraph. Now you got to know what those issues are. And the issues are so complex and hard to digest sometimes. And then you come into this factor of divided government in a way like I've never seen it before in Springfield. And I always would joke that, you know, that's how Washington acts. That's not how they do it in Springfield. There's a real understanding that you have to step up to the plate, do the statesman's like thing to keep things running. And now it's become such a winner-take-all political game for Republicans and Democrats in Springfield that you become very hard-pressed to see a way out of the morass.
And this is another thing I wanted to ask you about. It's like I don't understand how compromise emerges from this sometimes. You know, when you look at it and you put everything out on a table and you just, you know, look at printouts of competing position statements or notes or ideas or just all, you know, this morass that you talk about, right? Like what, with so many wild cards at play, like it doesn't seem like there's one real key to advancing everything and fixing everything, you know? So how sustainable is this? How long can this go? I don't.
Well, and again, this goes back to what we were saying earlier too about the real financial straits of the Chicago Public Schools, yeah, have basically been a moving target. And you and I both have gone through this where there's a certain X date is kind of like a drop date.
This is it. This is it. This is it. This is it. This is really it. This is it.
And it keeps moving. And that does not help, you know, because that's kind of, you know, the Chicken Little. And that's the way lawmakers will act. And frankly, then that's the way the public will act, too. It's like, how many times have I been told that X date is going to be the final date for something to happen, and it just escapes.
I should look this up in the clips. I should look up the words crying wolf and just like see like how many times that comes up in the archives. I bet it does more often than once, right?
Yeah, but and you know from experience that when it comes to politicians acting, they'd rather not.
That would certainly, I guess that would present itself as the easier option. But then again, if it's as bad as it's said to be, and it looks pretty bad, you know, at some point that becomes a vulnerability, doesn't it?
I mean, is yeah, that, and now we have this. I was going to ask you too about the ruling about from Lisa Madigan, the Attorney General's opinion that says that Chicago Public Schools still have the power to borrow despite the efforts by Governor Rauner and the State Board of Education to try to constrain that ability.
Yeah, so that was an interesting development. I think the statute that was getting thrown about when this whole so really, I mean, just to kind of catch people up here, and this is a very cliff-noted version, but the State Board of Education and obviously, you know, the governor's administration launched an investigation, a financial investigation into Chicago Public Schools, which at the outset just basically entailed the state asking the district for a lot of paperwork. And then the district kind of replying with, you know, well, a lot of this is already on the internet. I mean, here it is, but, you know, it's already out there kind of thing. That was funny. But the upshot was whether or not the school district would be determined to be in quote-unquote financial difficulty, right?
which people saw as a first step by the governor.
Correct.
Who has suggested and would like to see legislation passed that would allow CPS to go bankrupt.
And this particular statute that they were relying on for a, you know, a determination of financial difficulty, I think one of the potential consequences for a district that runs awry of this law would be that, you know, it can't borrow any more money. We need to, you know, and we're running on a credit card and a payday loan and, you know, we've got, you know, my watch and hawk and all sorts of stuff to kind of keep the school district running right now. But the law was, I think the district would argue the law was very clear that Chicago Public Schools was exempted from any kind of those punitive measures. And, you know, the ruling out Friday, you know, very wonderful timing, of course.
Yes, indeed.
Was I love this state. was certainly, I think, just kind of reiterated the status quo for a lot of people. But the governor has suggested some support for legislation that would allow the school system to go bankrupt. Bankruptcy gets talked about a lot, but bankruptcy takes a very long time, just legally speaking, to happen. Like, you know, working through a Chapter 9 proceeding for something like this. We talk about a morass. I mean, I can't even imagine, or I guess I can, you know, imagine like just the stacks and stacks and stacks of legal filings and just the amount of money that would be burned on something like that. Ultimately, you could even have a judge telling you, well, you know, raise taxes, you know, because you still have the, you know,
right.
There is still room to do that before everything goes, you know, really, really explodes, right? So, you know, is bankruptcy, and I get asked a lot if bankruptcy is an option. And I guess right now the answer is no, because it's not legal yet. But even if it was, it doesn't quite work the way I think people think it would work.
That it would immediately wipe away all of the past debts and those kinds of things. No, that all becomes negotiations and creditors. The creditors, right?
And vendors.
Yes.
You know, people are going to want to get paid. And so, you know, just working through, you know, in the bond market and just trying to determine like how this is all going to get divvied up, if it ever even happened, would take years, I would assume.
Juan Perez Jr., my Tribune colleague, education writer for the Chicago Tribune. I think we're both like Debbie Downers today or something like that. Yeah, wah, wah, wah. No, but thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Thank
I
you
appreciate
for having
it.
Me. That was fun.
We'll be back with more right after this.